Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Wrestle Chat Radio, our Extreme Rules review show. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour and a half, we will be discussing last night's Extreme Rules event at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. What a interesting 4 hours plus, if you want to count the pre-show, it turned out to be for the WWE. We certainly had some highlights from last night's Extreme Rules, and we certainly had some lowlights from last night's Extreme Rules, and we're going to discuss them all. First, we want to get to some news about Extreme Rules and some of the things that happened beforehand. As reported here yesterday on the Extreme Rules pre-show, Hulk Hogan was, in fact, backstage. He was not used in the Extreme Rules event, but he was backstage mingling with the talent and talking to them and being filmed for an upcoming special, which I guess will be the return of Hulk Hogan type special on the WWE Network. So Hulk Hogan back into the good graces of the WWE. And we may see a Hulk Hogan appearance tonight. There's no guarantee. They haven't announced it that I know of, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. Now, secondly, a lot of people wrote and said, oh, you know, when Kane got hurt, I thought maybe Hogan was going to come and substitute or something was going to happen. No, that's a legitimate injury. And Glenn Jacobs had actually made a campaign stop in which he was wearing that boot. And he was questioned about it. And he said it was a non-wrestling related injury. And at the time, he said he would be fine for Extreme Rules, and it was, quote-unquote, no big deal. WWE's releasing a statement saying it's a broken ankle. Now, obviously, they could be exaggerating. You know, they could be doing that as part of kayfabe that, well, the Bludgeon Brothers broke Kane's ankle. It may not be that. We don't know what it is. But the fact of the matter is that was a legit injury. So that's why the match had to be booked in that manner. So, with those two things in mind, let's jump right into the Extreme Rules pre-show. We start out with a match I didn't know was going to happen. Almas versus Sin Cara again in a rematch from SmackDown. And quite frankly, I'm a big fan of Almas, especially his NXT work, and I've always liked Sin Cara, this rendition of Sin Cara. The problem here is not the match. The problem is that I'm beginning to see that they are going to use Almas in a certain way, and that certain way is not the way they used him in NXT, and that certain way is not someone who is going to be portrayed as a major viable threat to the top-level contenders just yet. And I base that on the fact that not only did he have a hard time with Sin Cara on television, but last night on the pay-per-view, had a much harder time with him. And it's not that they're not equal wrestlers or they're not both great athletes or anything like that. It has nothing to do with their actual skill level inside the ring. It has to do with how they are being booked. And Sin Cara, for a very long time, has been booked as a very low-level mid-carder, if not an opening match type guy. And if you struggle to beat him on the main roster, you're having major trouble beating a Sin Cara, then logic would dictate that you would not be able to beat some of the top-level guys. And that's a shame, because I think that there's probably no better act right now in the WWE than there could be with Zelina Vega and Almas. What they did in NXT really was incredible. And I have no doubt in my mind they could do it here. I just don't think that's what the WWE has in mind, unfortunately. So, Mike, preliminary match, but yeah, my takeaway from it is Almas isn't going to be used as a top-level guy right now.
Right, and they're probably not really ready to watch. Use him as a top-level guy, as evidenced by what happened later on tonight when, lo and behold, a certain person came back, and we'll get to that later. But, I saw that match with him and Gargano. That was a match of the year candidate if I ever saw one, and I'm pretty sure that if they allowed him to do that here, and we've said this for years now with some of the guys they brought up from NXT. If they allowed them to do what they did in NXT, we get those type of matches here in NXT. And he's hoping that at least on SmackDown, when they move over to Fox, they start allowing them to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if it's a matter of what network they're on as far as just time constraints. Last night, you have to understand that aside from the Iron Man match, I don't know as a match went much more than 10 minutes, any match. I don't think so. I'd have to go back and check, but I think right around 10 minutes was the longest match other than, of course, the Iron Man match, which was guaranteed to go 30. Aside from that, it was kind of a very fast-paced get-in-and-get-out type thing because they had a lot of matches on this card. We then get to the New Day and Sanity. There's not much to say there. And again, it was a quick match. I'm very annoyed when the WWE puts matches on the pre-show and then has the audacity to run commercials for the event you're watching during it. I don't know why that's a thing. I mean, that's just plain silly. And it's annoying to have to watch it in a little tiny, screen on the bottom. The right people won. And, did they have the chemistry of the Usos and the New Day? No, they did not. Does it make Sanity look like world beaters and a force to be reckoned with? Not really. Not really. But at least the right people won. So, Todd, I'm okay with it. It was a decent match, for the pre-show matches that they had. I'm okay so far.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about the match with the New Day and Sanity. Like we said in the past, they need that win to get over, and they did it.
They did. The right people won, and that's fine. I mean, that's, like I said, that's probably the way it should be. Now, the good news is I guess the WWE took my advice, and right after this match, Ronda Rousey was seen taking her seat in the front row. So it didn't look like she was just there for one match and one match only and making it as obvious they possibly could that she was going to interfere, even though we all knew that is exactly what was going to happen. So, look, it's a minor point, but at least it goes to credibility. It goes to the credibility that Ronda Rousey really was there to watch some matches, Mike, instead of just interfere.
Yeah, we said this yesterday, and we said this probably all week long, that she couldn't just be showing up for that one match, because if he did that, we knew what was going to happen, and we knew, but they did what they usually do. I mean, we talked about John Cena, how he showed up for the majority of that card, and he sat in the crowd and he waited and they bided their time, and we know what happened there, now. We know what happened here too, but yeah, they had to do it this way. They almost wrote themselves into a corner with this whole suspension and stuff that she's not going to be there or whatever. They almost wrote themselves into a corner.
The funny thing is, I didn't really have any confidence that they would. I really didn't. It's sad. But I didn't have any confidence that they would. I thought to myself, WWE doesn't care. They'll probably just have her escorted down for the the match, and that'll be it. So, kudos to them for at least thinking along the lines of logic. So we get Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin, and this is where my head starts to explode a little bit because, A, I had said on this show they had some chemistry, and they might put on actually a really good match. They didn't put on a really good match. They put on a fair match at best. And I just, for the life of me, don't know what the WWE now is so face-heavy that the heels are at such a disadvantage that the heels are the underdogs. I don't think I've ever ran into a federation where the heels are the legit underdogs all the time. You're working from the perspective that the heels are the ones who are supposed to lose. The heels are the ones who have to climb that mountain. And that's usually reserved for the faces. A heel-heavy federation is usually a successful federation because you wait for those moments where the good guys win. You don't have to wait very long in the WWE. You don't have to wait very long at all. They always win. In fact, there's not even any quality heels. And we had speculated that Baron Corbin is basically one of the only legit heels over there, with the possible exception of Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre, and Drew McIntyre is still popular. Corbin isn't. For that reason, I think the wrong person won. Corbin, once again, looks like an idiot who can't kick out of a roll-up. Now, here's what you got to remember about this. Corbin wasn't hurt. Corbin wasn't wore down. Corbin wasn't injured. Corbin didn't have his leg worked on. There was no story told that Corbin's back hurt or his legs weren't functioning or something was wrong that he couldn't kick out of a very simple little roll-up. In fact, he was in control. Now, to his credit, Finn Balor did not wrestle his usual match where he acts like he's exactly the same size as Baron Corbin. In fact, Finn Balor did the exact opposite. Finn Balor was mauled for the most part of the match, came back, tried to, you know, fight back as best he could. Most of the time got blocked or reversed. And it was going pretty well. And I thought, okay, this is where they establish Baron Corbin as a major heel who's going to be a force to be reckoned with. Instead, they went for the cheap, Baron Corbin's going to get beat but not hurt. He's going to get rolled up where it's just like, oh, well, he didn't beat me up. He just pinned me, and now I'm going to make his life living hell, and we're going to see this again at SummerSlam. And I, for one, don't want to see it. The story you're telling is a story I don't want to see. That's the problem. I'd have much rather seen him cheat to win. I would have much rather had there be a double. If that's what you're going to do, if you're going to tell this story all the way to SummerSlam, then don't have an ending to that match. Just don't have an ending. Let them battle to a double countout. Let them battle to a double DQ. Let them do whatever's going to happen. Or let Baron Corbin be DQ'd if that's what needs to happen and you absolutely must give Finn the win. But to have Baron Corbin just rolled up again, he looks so easily beatable. Here's what they're portraying Baron Corbin to be. I'm a big, strong guy who's going to punch you, but if you know any wrestling moves at all, I can't kick out of them. If you know any sort of reverse cradle, small package, whatever, you got me, because I can't kick out of them. It's a horrible way to promote a heel, in my opinion, Mike. I mean, I don't think the right guy won this.
No. They weren't doing that with Big Cass. You know, they never did that with Kevin Nash. They never did that with, you know, the Big Show or even Scott Hall. You know, those are the guys that are, you know, about the same size. And look, you're right. That roll up, you got a 275 pound man that's kicking out of a. Trying to kick out of a roll-up by a guy that's, what, 190 pounds soaking wet?
Right.
You know? And logic would dictate that a 270-pound man would have enough strength to kick out of that type of roll-up, you know?
Especially if he's not been injured or he's not been weakened or anything. It's just the wrong person won. Or maybe no one should have won. But certainly Finn Balor should not have won this match if you're going to continue this feud. So we're continuing this feud. Why? Let's say Baron Corbin does pick on Finn Balor now. Let's say Baron Corbin does make Finn Balor life miserable until SummerSlam. We've already seen Finn Balor beat Baron Corbin. The ending has already been shown. So what is it now? Oh, we want to see him beat him again. Oh, now Baron Corbin's done more bad things to him, so now I want to see him beat him again? Have you ever went to a movie where the main bad guy in the movie gets his ass kicked in the very first 5 minutes of the movie, and then you got to sit through 2 hours of him doing more bad things to say, oh, I wonder if the good guy can kick his ass again after he's already kicked his ass the first time? No! That's not the way it works. There's a payoff. Baron Corbin does horrible things to Finn Balor. Finn Balor at SummerSlam beats Baron Corbin. That's the way it works. That's the way it works. Or he doesn't beat him, and you move on. But the bottom line is you don't have him beat him, and then he does all the horrible things. That's writing ass backwards. So I think the wrong guy won here, Todd, if anybody should have won.
Oh, you're absolutely right. They should have the right person won the match with Corbin and Balor, but like you said, I would have booked it the same way you did, have a no contest in that match.
I would have much rather seen a no contest and then Corbin start to be, miserable because he didn't beat him. He didn't lose, but he didn't beat him. That would make more sense. Anyway, I skipped the B-Team versus the Leaders of Worlds because, to be honest with you, I almost forgot about it. That's how much interest I had in this match. Now, some people have suggested, oh, maybe this is the way, maybe they were mad about Bray Wyatt and his car accident. No, that's not true. Bray Wyatt was cited for reckless driving and a whole bunch of other things, but if he was being punished, then he would have been the guy that had to take the pin. And they wouldn't have drugged Matt Hardy down, so much. Matt Hardy has been pinned consecutively for a month. One straight month, Matt Hardy has been pinned. So his Woken character is no more successful than his regular Matt Hardy character. The problem with this premise is it was Matt Hardy's continual losing that drove him to the Woken character. That's what we were told. Matt Hardy's on a huge losing streak, and he finally snapped, and he became Woken Matt Hardy, and this is a much harder guy to beat. Well, no, it's not. Obviously, it's not because he's lost for a month. He's done nothing but lose for a month. So if that's what drove him to become the Woken character, it doesn't make any sense because he has done no better. Okay, he's a tag team champion, but he's lost every match, and now he's not. It didn't matter because the Leaders of Worlds had zero charisma. WWE recognized this. It's not a team that people were going to get behind because you had to water down Bray Wyatt and you had to water down Matt Hardy to even make them gel. And it was like taking a third of the what makes the character fun and, disposing of the rest. Didn't work. Now, the B team is the feel-good winners, but I didn't hear the crowd go nuts. As a matter of fact, when everybody was supposed to be chanting B-Team, along with Bo Dallas. They just pumped in the music loud because nobody was doing it. Probably transitional champions. If I was a betting man, I would say this almost guarantees that the Revival will be the new WWE champions by SummerSlam, WWE Tag Team Champions. We'll see. I mean, things change weird in the world of WWE, but that would be logical. It wasn't a good match. It was like a Raw match, really. That's all it was. It was a Raw match. A lot of these matches last night were just kind of Raw matches. Then we get a big announcement from let me go to the phones on this first and get everybody's opinion. Mike, what do you think? I mean, I just think it was a nothing build, and then it ended up being a nothing match.
It's a nothing match, but what came out of that match for me is you take a good look at Bo Dallas. Take a good look at him. Tell me he's not looking more and more like his brother.
Yeah, I mean, he is, but what good is it going to do us if we have to suffer through another 2 months of the B-Team, doing their ridiculousness. And Bray Wyatt, I don't. God knows what's going to happen to Bray Wyatt now. I don't know whether they're going to. I guess they'll invoke their rematch, maybe tonight. Maybe Bray will turn on Matt tonight. Does anybody care? That's the problem. Bray Wyatt were to turn on Matt Hardy tonight, does anyone care? It's a shame. It's a shame. It should have been much better than this. Should have been much better. So it's about to get worse. Carmella and Asuka. Now, you got Asuka in this federation for one reason, as far as I know. And that reason is she is a very, very qualified female wrestler who has a lot of moves and a lot of striking ability and makes a match look real and can go 15, 20 minutes and can carry a match and all of those accolades. That's why you got brought Asuka up. And then you put her in a gimmick match where she's going to do exactly nothing. Carmella is going to do exactly nothing. And James Ellsworth's claim to fame in this is, I got out of the shark cage, but I was hung upside down by my foot, and Asuka decided to use me as a pinata, which was the funniest part of the whole night, though, by the way. When Michael Cole said it's like a pinata because things keep falling out of his pocket when she beats him because he had so many weapons that he was going to pass down. That was funny. There was some humor in it, but Asuka's worth isn't in humor. Asuka's worth is in a serious match where you say, wow, that was, you know, that was a really good match for the women's division. Now she's a part of the circus. And I don't know whether it's because they have no faith in Carmella being able to put on a long match with Asuka, or they felt they didn't have time to put on a decent match, or they just wanted to promote it this way and get it done with. I don't know. But having Asuka just pushed headlong into the steel cage and then pinned doesn't look very good. Doesn't look very good at all. And then she gets the moral victory by kicking the hell out of James Ellsworth, but it's too late because Carmella's got the belt. It's a very disappointing match. And it's more disappointing because I feel that Carmella showed nothing. She's now being promoted as, I have no skill whatsoever. I can only win if there's horrible distractions going on and I have weapons. And I don't hold a candle to any girl in this division. And I thought they were building Carmella up slowly to be, she has some skill. She's not somebody to be taken lightly. Instead, they have now made her, I'm just some girl who can't fight. And if James Ellsworth can distract you enough, I got one move. And I don't like that. I just don't think that's a great way to promote Carmella, Mike.
Yeah, you're possibly right, but I do think the right person won the match, number one. Number two, when you looked at when Carmella and James Ellsworth came down to ring and you saw that sweatshirt and you saw how big it was on him, you're right. Telling me you're going to look at that thing and say, well, he's not hiding any weapons in that, you know?
Yeah, nobody frisked him.
Think about it. No. And that's another point. Well, we don't expect – in these type of matches, there have been a number of shark cage matches before. In these type of matches, you don't usually frisk the guy that's in the cage. You just don't do it. And I mean, we basically have accepted that as part of the game, you know, part of –
I guess, but when you're wearing that big of a jacket, I mean, wouldn't you say, come on, dude, take your jacket off. You don't need this. It's, you're inside, you know, in the summertime.
Yeah,
you know,
you're right. And
it's a little sore, you know, I don't know. The right person won. There's no question. But wouldn't it have been nice if there was a minor distraction by James Ellsworth and it led to a series of moves by Carmella that she could have still pushed her into the cage. James Ellsworth could have had the cage lowered or something. She still could have pushed her into the cage. My point was, take away the gimmickry. And the message that was told is Carmella cannot fight. Carmella cannot wrestle. Carmella can distract you. She has weapons. She has James Ellsworth. But without all of that, see, Ric Flair had his entourage and he had whatever. But when you boiled it right down to we're taking everything away from you, you still had trouble, and everybody knew it. The gimmick was Ric Flair would rather take the shortcut. But if he can't take the shortcut, you still got trouble because he's much better than you think he is. Carmella's is, if you take away the help, she's helpless. She can't beat anybody. And that's not what I want to see. It's not what I want to see at all. So I don't know. Again, I'm thinking the right person won, Todd, but I think it made Carmella look really, really bad.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It did make Carmella really, really bad. I kind of laughed at that part where James Ellsworth was hanging upside down like a pinata. That was the hilarious part in that match. And in a way, it's an okay match, but they had the right person to win the match.
The right person won the match. I think it sent a really bad message as far as Carmella. And that is that they have no intention of building her up as a qualified fighter who prefers to take a shortcut. Instead, it's a non-qualified fighter who has to take shortcuts. And I don't like that, Carmella. We then get to Shinsuke Nakamura versus Jeff Hardy, a match I was greatly looking forward to, and I do not know what in the fuck the WWE was thinking. I don't know whether Jeff Hardy was injured. He couldn't do the match. I doubt it. But what we saw, other than it makes Shinsuke Nakamura look like a big heel, which is good, but that's still a ripoff. That's a pay-per-view. That's not a Monday Night Raw. You wanted to do that, you do that on SmackDown. You do that on SmackDown, and then you carry it to the pay-per-view for the rematch. You don't do that at the pay-per-view. You absolutely do not do that at the pay-per-view, because there were people who paid money to see Jeff Hardy versus Shinsuke Nakamura at that pay-per-view, and they got nothing. And then for whatever bizarre reason that makes no sense, Randy Orton shows up, walks down to ringside. Shinsuke Nakamura jumps out of the ring because suddenly Shinsuke Nakamura is afraid of Randy Orton. I remember when he wasn't. Apparently he is now. Jumps out of the ring like a scared rabbit, and for no reason I can think of, Randy Orton kicks Jeff Hardy in the testicles, stomps him in the testicles, and then just walks away. Okay. Well, I guess Randy Orton's a heel now. That's fine. He's a better heel. But that's not a match. That's not where you pull this. You don't pull this at your big events, at your pay-per-views. You pull that on TV. You know, the panel, I don't know whether they knew what was going to happen ahead of time or not, the pre-show panel. But the pre-show panel saying this match could steal the show. This is the match we're predicting steals the show. Steals the show. It wasn't even a match. That's a disaster. And I'll tell you what else it does. You may argue, well, it makes Shinsuke look like a big heel, and that's good. And that might be the light at the end of the tunnel. But it doesn't make Shinsuke Nakamura look like he's good. The great thing about Nakamura as a heel is you say to yourself, he's a bad guy, but begrudgingly, we got to give the devil his due. He is great. That's what makes a great heel. A great heel is a guy that you say, I hate that guy, but I can't argue that he's good. Like Shawn Michaels when he was a heel. Like Triple H when he was a heel. All the top heels usually have that one thing in common. Kurt Angle when he was a heel. Is you watch them and say, I don't like them and I don't like the way they do business, but I can't deny they're good. That made Shinsuke Nakamura just look like, I know I couldn't have any chance ever of beating Jeff Hardy. So I will do this. You couldn't give us 2 minutes before the referee was distracted and he did that? Couldn't give us 2 minutes of a match? Is Jeff Hardy that crippled up? I don't think so. Nobody told me that. So I think this was a disaster. I mean, I really, 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 I was screaming at the TV. I'm like, how in the hell do you do this to people who paid good money to see this match? If Jeff Hardy was that injured, then don't put him in the goddamn match. Cancel the match, because that was an embarrassment. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, that was an embarrassment. And look, if he's that injured, then don't put him in the match. And then somewhere down the line, you're gonna have to invoke the old 30-day rule, whatever it is, that you're injured. You can't go. You know, you got to give it up if he's that injured. And you're telling me even so that we know he's injured. Even so, we couldn't have had a 10-minute match where he, you know, there's some sort of an injury that happens or a fake injury that happens, you know, that he sells all throughout that time, and then we get him Shinsuke winning, but we get, and then we get what's his name coming up and taking
Orton, yeah.
Taking advantage. You know, I was expect after he gets hit with the with Shinsuke's knee strike, you know, his move to the head, I was expecting an RKO, not just a weak ass kick to the testicle.
Well, he's not going to do the RKO now, because suddenly that's what the fans want to see. The booking would have been great if they fought for 8 minutes, 6 minutes, whatever it happened to be, and both guys are laying outside the ring and Randy Orton's music hits and Shinsuke Nakamura's eyes bug out and he thinks, oh my God, here comes Randy Orton after me. And instead he RKOs Jeff Hardy, throws him in the ring, and Shinsuke gives him the knee to the face for the 1-2-3. That would have been a hell of a lot more effective than giving the fans absolutely nothing. Too many of these matches gave the fans absolutely nothing. It almost looked like they booked it on the day of the show, where they're just like, I don't know, you'll do this. It doesn't matter because you're only in the ring 6-8 minutes. All these matches seem to be like 6 or 8 minutes of improvise, you know, or less. I mean, Shinsuke Nakamura's, the bell barely rang. The introduction was longer than the match. Randy Orton's spot was longer than the match. That's no good. It's just no good. Todd, I was very disappointed in this because I was looking forward to it. Maybe that's the point, but I don't think it had that much effect.
It was a terrible ending. A low blow between the legs. Man, that was the worst ending by Randy Orton I ever seen.
Yeah, Randy Orton comes out and for no reason at all, just boom, okay, I guess I'll just kick Jeff Hardy, because Jeff Hardy did what? Took the belt from him? Is that who won? I don't even remember who he took the belt from. So now we've hit a snag in the pay-per-view, haven't we? We've had a basically 6-minute, 8-minute comedy match where Carmella looks like a bumbling girl who just happened to luck into a belt. And Asuka looks like she's so easily distracted. Remember when Asuka looked like a wrestling machine who didn't let anything get to her? She was cool and calm and focused. They have torn that away now. And Asuka looks like a bumbling idiot who, if a mosquito flies by in the arena, she's going to be like, oh, Mothra, and then somebody's going to kick her in the head and win. I mean, that's terrible. I don't mind you showing her weaknesses that she can be beaten, but don't knock her all the way down to she's an idiot who's just distracted. First, she's distracted by James Ellsworth. She's hypnotized. She's hypnotized by James Ellsworth in her own costume. Just stands there with her mouth open. Oh. That's bad enough. Now, she has the opportunity to win a belt, and she'd rather kick James Ellsworth in the ass when he's hanging upside down instead of saying, this is my opportunity to beat the hell out of Carmella and take the belt. She doesn't look focused. Whoever's writing this has now destroyed her character into a woman who is very unfocused and very easily rattled, and it's the exact antithesis of what we were told she was. Not a fan of that. Not a fan of that at all. Now it's time for the steel cage match. Now let me first say this. Kevin Owens comes out really looking like the face. I'm afraid to get in this cage with Braun Strowman. He's been torturing me for weeks and weeks and weeks now. Braun Strowman is licking his lips saying, can't wait for him to get in here so I can start at him again. The wrong vibe. The wrong vibe starts this match. We then basically get Braun Strowman chasing Kevin Owens, who's just trying to run away. I'm scared to death. I'm just trying to run away, which is fine. We get a few bumps, a few things, but mostly what we get is the idea that Kevin Owens is just simply trying to escape the cage any way he can. And he finally handcuffs Braun Strowman. And now we're led to believe that Kevin Owens, who tried to flee the cage the minute the bell rang, wants to stick around for 5 minutes. Because a man who tipped over an ambulance, a man who broke a ladder with his bare hands, won't be able to snap handcuffs. Again, illogical. I would have been fine if Kevin Owens made a run for the cage and Braun Strowman snapped the handcuffs, because then you would have said, well, it just wasn't quick enough. But when you say, well, I got him now, he couldn't possibly break out of these handcuffs, that's pretty stupid. That's stupid booking. Makes Kevin Owens look stupid. Now, what happened next is probably the highlight of the entire Extreme Rules, and it angered some people, because some people had written, didn't Mick Foley not do the same thing in the same place at Hell in a Cell against The Undertaker? So let me address this. Not really. Mick Foley was on top of the cage. The cage had a roof, and he was on top of it. It was Hell in a Cell. He was thrown off from a standing position on top, which is about 6-8 feet higher. At minimum. Shane McMahon's jumped off that same cage plenty of times. So it's not like they were trying to undermine Mick Foley or anything like that. I don't buy that. Shane McMahon's done the exact same thing. However, Kevin Owens has been taking some hellacious bumps. Now, as far as them saying, my God, he's killed him, I think the ladder was taller that he got thrown off of than that cage. At least it looked it. But it was a good moment. No question. But I still say, even with the handcuffs, even with everything that took place, Kevin Owens still comes out looking sympathetic. The good thing they did, I was holding my breath, because when they said Braun Strowman's coming over toward the stretcher, I said, if he hits Kevin Owens on the stretcher, if he prevents the medical team from getting to Kevin Owens, then you may as well make Braun Strowman a heel, because that's what he is. And you may as well make Kevin Owens a face, because that's what he will be. So they stopped short of that, thankfully. And the story to this match was Braun Strowman couldn't give a damn about winning this match. He just wanted to destroy Kevin Owens, which could be a logical thing, because Braun Strowman has no need to win or lose this match. It wasn't for anything special. It wasn't for a title shot. It wasn't for contendership. He's got the Money in the Bank briefcase. This was just Braun Strowman's punishment of Kevin Owens. So I was okay with this match. The ending had a good grand finale, had an exciting feel. There were some illogical things, but there were some logical things. So all in all, I was okay with this match, Mike.
I was okay with it as well. You know, not that spot, well, with notwithstanding, because logic states after you handcuff a guy to the ropes, and he struggled with those handcuffs a good 2 or 3 minutes. You're telling me, and that, he struggled with those handcuffs before he broke them. It had to be 2, 3, 4 minutes he struggled with them. You're telling me in that time that Kevin Owens, who's 100 pounds lighter than Braun Strowman, couldn't have put on a burst of speed, got up the cage, got outside, and dropped down, you know?
Of course he could have.
Now,
that's what I mean. It made him look stupid. But I'm gonna go out on a limb here. Kevin Owens has been doing things lately to get pops out of the fans. He fell off that ladder, which was a good 20 feet or close to it. The ladder, I think, was more impressive than the cage. He just did that dive off the cage. These are things that smart wrestling fans talk about and say, did you see what Kevin Owens did? Isn't Kevin Owens great? Isn't Kevin Owens, because they know that's Kevin Owens, you know. Isn't Kevin Owens great? Isn't Kevin Owens giving up his body for our entertainment? Isn't Kevin Owens really making, you know, the highlight reel? That's what you normally do with a heel before he turns face. You normally show his willingness to give up his body. And then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, that guy really is tough. Wow, you know, he did do some cool things. And oh, man, you know, maybe we do feel a little bit sorry for him. And then all of a sudden, boom, here he comes back with a new lease on life. He has the come to Jesus moment, and he's a good guy. And I think that Kevin Owens is very close. Very close. Because he's ran his course. I don't know what else he can do. Who's he going to fight? Who's up next for Kevin Owens in a big feud? Think about it. He's went through all of the faces. Maybe Lashley, but I mean, I had a feeling that in the next month or two, we'll be seeing Kevin Owens do some more highlights, and then he's going to slide into a face gimmick. Because the WWE has been purposely targeting certain things like, oh, well, maybe he is being picked on a little bit by Braun Strowman. And look, he has all the highlights on each pay-per-view. It's Kevin Owens who has the highlight. And then, oh, let's endorse the fact that he went to the Shania Twain concert and looked like a big fanboy and kind of a nice guy. Let's not only allow that to be put up, let's kind of feature it. And when you do something like that, you're normally saying, we're trying to get Kevin Owens endeared to the fans. Well, he's already kind of endeared to the fans. I don't know if Kevin Owens ever been a good guy in his career, but I do think it's coming. Anyway, it was a hell of a bump he took last night, Todd. I thought it was obviously the best moment in Extreme Rules.
No, you're absolutely right. He did take the best bump through the announcer's table. You know, like you said, he's playing like the face. He should supposed to be like playing the heel. Not Braun Strowman. He should be the face, technically, but what can you do in the wrestling business?
I'll give Kevin Owens credit for another thing. Kevin Owens does something I personally would never do. And I've taken, as Todd knows, I've taken some of them type of bumps. You always kind of want to, at least I did, always kind of want to do it on my side, like so I can see where I'm going. You know what I mean? I don't leave it to Lady Luck to do a back, to, you know, just backfall. I don't like a backfall because if you don't keep your head up, you know, your head could jerk backwards. I like more like a side fall, like almost like an elbow drop type thing. When you like almost like Shane does. Seems safer. Kevin Owens has no problem just going backwards. I don't know what would happen if he wasn't, if he didn't hit the table properly, because to my knowledge, I didn't see him look back. So it was kind of like, well, I'm trusting you to just, I don't know, man. He takes some hellacious bumps and he does it square on his back, which is fine if you're going through a table in the ring. But when you're falling off something high, you tend to want to kind of like glance and be like, let me see where I'm going. Like I said, like an elbow drop. And he don't do it. I mean, it's scary. I watch it back, and I'm like, Jesus, man. You know, you got to have some faith to just be like, okay, backwards I go. I think the table. You don't even know when you're going to hit the table. At least when you do it like an elbow drop, you know when impact's coming. You know what I mean? You're like, I'm eighth of a second from impact. When you're backwards, you're just like, okay, when I hit, I hit. It's just weird. It's scary. And he likes it that way, obviously. He does it well. But that's scary. So anyway, to me, it you know, that makes Kevin Owens to me look like a possibility for a face turn. May not happen, but I don't know. I don't know who'd be next in line for Kevin Owens as a face if Owens stays heel. We then get to the Bludgeon Brothers versus Team Hell No. Before we get to that, let's talk about Kurt Angle's announcement. Kurt Angle says if Braun Strowman does not show up on Raw tonight, which that's not going to happen, I don't think, or accept a match tonight, he's stripped of the belt. That was the loudest fan reaction the whole night. the crowd is sending a very clear message. And I know the WWE is going to be smug and say, well, we planned it that way. We put the seed in the heads of fans that Brock Lesnar is never there and he doesn't care about the business. We're the ones who planted that gimmick. No, you're the ones who took advantage of that feeling. That feeling was already there, WWE. The fans did not want Brock Lesnar to be the champion. And you, after you figured it out finally, took advantage of that and underlined it as a gimmick. But don't dare say, oh, we made the fans feel that way. The fans didn't want Brock Lesnar as champion. They understand now that it's the poison that I've been saying and everybody on this panel has been saying for a year. We want a champion that's there. Pick one. I don't care who it is. At least he's there. So I got a huge pop. Now, obviously, it's a gimmick, but it doesn't matter. You heard the fan reaction. All right, so Team Hell No was assaulted backstage, and Kane supposedly had his leg trapped in the door and hit with that hammer and could not compete. So it was Daniel Bryan basically against the Bludgeon Brothers for a short period of time, which was fine. It made Daniel Bryan look like a reckless sort of a uphill underdog who I'm not afraid. I'll do the best I can. That's your typical face. Understanding I'm not going to win. I'm not going to win, but I'm going to make sure they know they've been in a fight, especially after they attacked me. Then Kane comes out limping with a big boot on, and he does what he can, which is basically choke slams. And Brian gets back in. Brian ends up getting pinned. I knew Team Hell No wasn't winning. Glenn Jacobs was already at political events with the boot on. So for the people who don't think that his, the political events are taking place now, this is the campaign. Can't be around forever. What are you going to do? Win the belt and do what? Take it to the political campaigns and say, if elected, I'll give this belt up. If not, then I'm going back to wrestling. Then people would say, well, okay, go to hell back to wrestling. We're not voting for you. So Glenn Jacobs got to hit the campaign trail and keep now out of the WWE if he wants to win, which I presume he does. So anyway, good match as far as the story that was told, because the story that's told is Daniel Bryan is fearless. Maybe to a fault. Kane is a force to be reckoned with, even injured. And he's loyal to Daniel Bryan, which is good because that's what the fans wanted to see. And the Bludgeon Brothers are still monsters. So everyone came out looking better. So for intent, at least, this was one of the better matches, Mike.
Yeah, it was one of the better matches. But we'll get to the other three in a little while. But, yeah, I like the match. And one last thing about Kevin Owens. I'll just add to what you're saying. I mean, it would be fine if he's finding, if he's doing these things with, like, the Big Show who's been in the, been in the thing, or Kane who's been for 20 years. But this spot was done by a guy. He had all the trust in the world in a guy who's been in the sport for how long now?
Yeah, I know. I know, it's scary. I'm telling you. It's scary. If you watch the majority of people who take these bumps, I think Shane once fell off that really high thing, but he was on like almost one of those things that the fire department bring out when you're jumping off a building and you're told to kind of just fall backwards and it's like a marshmallow. They disguised it, but that's kind of what it was. But when you're hitting a table, and those tables are, that hard, almost like trash or the garbage cans that you see now, those hard Tupperware type material. So it's not like going through wood. I always wanted to see when I was landing. See, that's the thing. I don't mind jumping off something high and going through a table. I want to see when I'm going to hit. I want to be able to you can't see nothing when you just fall backward. That's a scary thing, Todd. And he's done it two, three times now.
Oh, you're absolutely right. He did it like two or three times, like you said. We saw many times where Shane McMahon did the same thing, fell off off the cage or off the Titantron thing. We've seen it quite a few times in the past and last night.
But Shane does it where he sort of can see when he's going to hit. You know, you take it sideways, sort of. You take it on the elbow, shoulder, side portion of your body. Kevin Owens is taking it flat on his back, which you're told, you know, that's the way you do it in a ring. But damn, man. What happens if Braun Strowman overthrew him a little? Well, he didn't barely even throw him. But what happens if they didn't measure it right? What happens if he came up short of the table? At least the one way you can try to get your foot down, you can try to adjust. You know, Shane usually does that elbow drop for a reason. He can see when he's going to the point of impact. He can see the point of impact. You cannot see the point of impact if you just fall backwards. It's almost like one of those trust me falls. You know what I mean? And that's scary. So hats off to Kevin Owen, really, because I would never do that. I would never do that. That's very dangerous. And I'm surprised WWE lets him do it, because weren't they the ones? Remember, Mick Foley got thrown off the cage, but he kind of went through shoulder like that, too, where he could see point of impact. He didn't go off backwards, where he's looking up at the top of the arena. So, and Kevin Owens, much like Mick Foley, has a little padding. So, you know, it's okay, but wow, it's scary stuff. It really is. All right. So listen, we finish up the Team Hell No by saying, I think a good story was told, Todd. I think, you know, even though Daniel Bryan's pinned, he comes out looking like a courageous underdog. Kane comes out looking like a heroic, friend who tried to help even when he was injured, and the Bludgeon Brothers come out looking like monsters, so everybody wins.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, like Daniel Bryan came out like an underdog type, and Kane comes out a couple minutes later trying to be like the heroic type, and it still was a pretty good match with the Bludgeon Brothers.
It was a fun match, and it served its purpose. Now we get to Bobby Lashley and Roman Reigns. This was supposed to be the main event, and right up until the pre-show, it was scheduled to be the main event. They switched it. Now, I don't know whether they switched the winner or not, but they switched the order of the matches. All I have to say is this. I do not like Bobby Lashley as a professional wrestler. I think he's boring. I don't like the way he sells. He's exhausted after 4 minutes. You can see the sweat flying off him after 3 or 4 minutes, and Roman Reigns is not sweating. Takes a lot of energy to move that type of muscle mass. And he just has to have too much of this. I'm outside the ring and I'm just kind of like, I'm not hurt. I'm just kind of, you know what I mean? I just don't like Bobby Lashley as a professional wrestler. He's just not my cup of tea. I don't see any exciting matches ever coming out of a Bobby Lashley contest. I just don't. I hadn't seen any on Impact, and I don't see any coming forward in WWE. His style is just not conducive to it. His idea of selling is, I won't do any body language. I'll just kind of hold my head or look like I'm hurt. He doesn't understand that. Like, look at Jeff Hardy. When Jeff Hardy's hurt, you can see it in his body language. You can see it in the way he's holding himself. Bobby Lashley's like, I don't want to bother. And you know why he doesn't want to bother? Because it expends too much energy. When you're a Jeff Hardy and you don't have that muscle mass, you can writhe and wiggle all over the mat and be like, oh, my arm. When somebody like Lashley does it, it's like, well, no, when I sell, that's when I rest. That's where I'm catching my breath. That's where I'm getting my second wind. And it shows. And because of that, his matches are just paced in a way I don't like. When you can make Roman Reigns look like, the cardio master, you got to rethink it, because you're not going to get long matches out of Lashley. Maybe for that reason, he's perfect for Brock Lesnar, because he ain't going to get one out of Brock Lesnar either. But you're much more likely to get one out of Brock than Bobby. So they have what I would call a weird match. Because now they're saying, well, Lashley's the powerhouse, because, of course, we've been promoting Roman Reigns as the powerful guy. We've been promoting Roman Reigns as the powerhouse. But when he's side by side with Bobby Lashley, I said this for a long time, Roman Reigns is approximately my size. And Bobby Lashley, while he may not weigh too much more, is a monster as far as muscle mass. And you can't possibly say that Roman Reigns is on an equal power level to him. So now they have to say, no, Bobby Lashley's the powerhouse. Roman Reigns is the brawler. You don't want to get into a fist fight with Roman Reigns. Before it was, you don't want to match power with Roman Reigns. Now it's, you don't want to get in a fist fight with Roman Reigns. And Lashley sold that okay, I'm much more powerful, but when he throws those big, you know, right hands, they hurt. So it was okay, I guess. But when it was over, I couldn't help but say, out of the two, I wish Roman Reigns had won. Because if this is what is going to decide who fights Brock Lesnar, we already know what the outcome is. Which means Bobby Lashley is going to be your champion. If that's the case, I have no proof that that's going to dictate who fights Brock Lesnar. Maybe tonight that changes. Maybe something comes, you know, Roman Reigns comes down and he wins and there's a three-way. I don't know what's going to happen. But what I do know is Brock Lesnar going to be losing at SummerSlam. Especially after last night's crowd reaction. And I don't want to see Lashley as champion. Because while he's going to be there, he's not going to put on he's going to put on Brock Lesnar style matches. Just more of them. 5 minute, 6 minute title defenses where nothing really happens much. And I'm just not up for that. I'm just not, Mike. So I wasn't really impressed with this match.
To me, Roman Reigns carried the match number one and number two. Did you catch, I believe halfway through the match, did you catch the reaction that the crowd was giving to Roman Reigns? It was the whole John Cena, Roman sucks, Roman, we like you, we hate you, we like you, we hate you, that type of
yeah.
thing.
Let's go Roman, yeah. Roman sucks, yeah.
That.
Yeah,
now,
I don't know.
If they can get that going, and if he's 50-50, and I'd buy that. You know, I'd buy that. I'm all for that. At least he's getting over some way. Whereas before, he just wasn't. Now, did it take Bobby Lashley to make the fans say there's somebody could be worse? Now, granted, we've made the argument here on this show that Roman Reigns is not as bad a professional wrestler than some people say. And he proved that last night. He carried that match.
There's no question about it. I mean, look, if the argument on Roman Reigns is we don't like his character and he's been force-fed on us and his matches aren't usually all that exciting, okay, but he probably doesn't book his matches. If you're saying we don't like Roman Reigns because he's not a good professional wrestler, you're wrong. You don't have a leg to stand on. It's not even close. That's not even close to the truth. Bobby Lashley is not a good professional wrestler. He has no body language. He doesn't sell well. He can't hang in the ring for a long time. He has limited repertoire. He has no real good facial expression. He basically has his look. That's what he has. And some MMA qualifications. Aside from that, he doesn't have anything. All right, let's get to Alexa Bliss versus Nia Jax. And naturally, Ronda Rousey at ringside. Natty comes down. I do want to say this about the announced team, though. They were horrible last night. Especially Coach. There were some things that Coach said that I was just like, well, I don't even know what he's talking about. What in the blue hell is he talking about? But Corey Graves was also horrible. Corey Graves was terrible. During this match, which is a no-holds-barred, no-DQ, no-count-out match, he says Alexa Bliss should just go for the DQ or the count-out. And had to be reminded, this is a no-DQ, no-count-out match, Corey. I'm sorry, that's unacceptable. You don't even know the stipulations to the match you're calling. Unacceptable. But anyway, Ronda Rousey at ringside was the whole reason that this match existed. And once again, I'm telling you straight up the way it is. The women's division now exists only for Ronda Rousey. There is no other reason for this women's revolution to exist. It exists for Ronda Rousey. Natty was made to look like somebody who couldn't hang. Alexa Bliss did a few things, but again, looked like, well, without help from Mickie James, she can't hang. And all kinds of weapons. Nia Jax, for the record, I have heard a million interviews with Nia Jax. Seems like a very sweet lady. Seems like a very nice person. She's not a good wrestler. And she's never going to be. Her gimmick is her size, and she tries to underplay that now because, well, I don't want to look like I'm, you know, I got an advantage. She stumbles around. She doesn't sell well. She has trouble completing basic moves. For a while, I said, well, you know, give her a chance. Let's see if she gets better. I saw some minor improvement. But I think she's hit the wall. I think this is the Nia Jax you can hope for. And that's not good enough. It's not good enough. It's not going anywhere. Where's it going? So, unfortunately, I think she's going to get buried in the mix. What else is going to happen here? She's going to continue her feud with Alexa. She's going to fight Ronda Rousey again. Does anybody care? And her main drawback is her skills on the microphone. She never sounds like she's serious. Ever. I mean, it couldn't get more scripted. It's like a Steven Seagal movie, you know, where he's just like reading off somebody's forehead. It's not good. It's not good. So, naturally, Ronda Rousey jumps the barricade, beats the hell out of everybody. Gets beat up with a kendo stick, but it gives Alexa Bliss a little bit of a time to wiggle away and manage to hit a DDT on a chair and pin Nia Jax, and she's still the champion. I can promise you this is leading to a it's got to be a three-way, because who else does Nia Jax fight at SummerSlam? There's nothing for Nia Jax now. So it's probably going to be a three-way. Unless they just keep Nia at it. Unless she fights like Mickie James at SummerSlam. That'd be pretty pathetic. Again, not a good match. A match that we all knew what was going to happen. It was just like, let's sit back and wait for Ronda Rousey to interfere. And I never thought the belt was going to change hands, and it didn't, Mike. So this was a bummer, really, I thought.
Yeah, the one thing that came out of this match is that, you know, for me, was the many times that Alexa, when they were face-to-face, she was sitting there pulling things out of the ring, out from underneath the ring, trying to go after her in her face. And it was logical that each time she did that, that Nia was able to catch those things. Now, she ended up throwing a bunch of them in the ring, but it was logical that, you know, you're not going to be able to straight up for a 5 foot nothing, 100 nothing woman to hit a 6 foot tall, you know, even with a chair, a 6 foot tall, 200, almost 300 pound woman, you know.
But later on, she did, Mike. Later on, she did. She hits her with a chair, and here's another one of my Nia peeves. If you agree to be hit with a chair, be hit with a chair. Because when she's trying to hit you, not in the back, she took it okay in the back. When she tried to hit her, like, in the front part of her arm or whatever, Nia's, like, throwing her body sideways, like, I don't really want to take it. And you could break your finger that way, or you could break your arm that way, or your elbow that way. And she did, and so Alexa had to, like, love tap her with the chair. It was just terrible. So a love tap with the chair, and she's, She's a terrible seller. Terrible. She's still, help. It's terrible. I'm just not a Nia Jax fan. I think she seems like a nice lady. But I just don't think she's going to be a big-time professional wrestler because there's too much there that's not good. She's very limited. If you don't make her a monster heel that survives because of her size, there's nothing left. Because there's nothing past that. It's not like, well, she's a monster heel who survives on her size, but if she's in there with a girl of equal size, she can still do these. No, there's nothing. She either dominates you on size or there is nothing else. And now it's been proven, well, she can't even dominate you on size if she's in there with a girl like Alexa Bliss who might use a chair or might use a kendo stick or whatever. I don't see much left. I didn't think this was a very good match, and I thought it was all about, again, Ronda Rousey, Todd.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, you're going to see probably a three-way match for that Raw Women's title at SummerSlam. And like you said, it was an okay match, but wasn't great either.
No, it's just like a Raw match. All these last night were like Raw or SmackDown matches for the most part. So we get AJ Styles versus Rusev. Rusev was getting huge reactions. They were chanting Rusev Day during the Bobby Lashley Roman Reigns match. That's how much the crowd cared about either one of these guys. Which I don't condone, but hey, it sends a message, doesn't it? So Rusev gets a hero's welcome. Rusev Day chants are echoing. Rusev certainly came off looking like this proud contender who says, I really want to do this. I'm going to give it my whole heart effort. This is my first title shot. I know what it means to me. And the crowd was kind of divided, even with a guy like AJ Styles. There was, let's go AJ and Rusev Day. And it was interesting. I thought they put on a better match than most people probably thought they were going to. And I'll tell you something about Rusev that's more impressive to me than anything else. Rusev can also create motion. Rusev, yes, AJ Styles created most of the motion in that match. But Rusev isn't panting and puffing and sweating like Marco Rubio on a debate stage after 5 minutes, like Bobby Lashley. He has good cardio for a guy his size. He really does. He was hanging with AJ Styles, and AJ Styles has got a lot of cardio. And he's 100 pounds lighter. So that's the first thing I noticed about Rusev. There's no doubt in my mind that this was a test. Can Rusev put on a great match with our best guy? They know that's their best guy, or at least one of their best guys. Can Rusev hang with our top-level guys? And the answer is yes. Absolutely yes. Now, the ending I have a problem with. And the reason I have a problem with it is this is exactly what I warned everybody about yesterday on our preview show. Aiden English takes off the buckle. He does it to help Rusev. He's not trying to hurt Rusev. Turns out Rusev's head gets rammed into it, which we knew from the second he took it off that's what was going to happen. Turns out Rusev's head gets rammed into it, but that doesn't cause the pin. Because AJ goes for the pin the minute Rusev's head gets rammed into it and Rusev kicks out. At that point, I'm saying to myself, that was awesome because I thought that was the end. That was a false finish even I fell for. But then 10 seconds later, he does win. So the indication was Rusev was tough enough to kick out of that initial hit, but he couldn't defend himself after it, and he got caught. Afterwards, you see Aiden English trying to explain what he did. I took off the buckle, but it didn't work, and Rusev's looking a little bit angry. If Rusev turns on Aiden English over this, it makes Rusev look like a sore loser. It doesn't make Aiden English look like a heel. Rusev could say, I never told you to take off the buckle. That's fine, but Aiden English has cheated for you a million times. If you want Aiden to be the bad guy in this thing and Rusev to look like the face, Aiden English had to do something on purpose, out of jealousy, to stop Rusev from winning the minute it looked like Rusev's going to win that belt. Then the whole crowd turns on him saying, we had our moment. Rusev had this belt won, and Aiden English, jealous ass, took it from us. The way it looks now is Aiden English trying to give the crowd what it wanted, a Rusev victory, and it backfired. And it's not really his fault. See what I mean? So I hope this doesn't lead to the breakup, Mike, because if it does, I don't think it's going to make Rusev look heroic at all.
I don't think it's going to make him look heroic at all. And in fact, it's, you know, and it's going to do all. I mean, what I went back and I watched the three commercials that he did. There's an Xfinity commercial that he did as well, and he came off looking funny. And yeah, his wife wasn't in that commercial, but Natty was. You know, she was cooking, helping him cook a meal or whatever for his wife for so-called anniversary. And then we know about the Snickers commercial, and we know about him just being goofy in that Dollar General commercial. You know, just destroying displays. I mean, that's being goofy is not a heel thing. You know, so if they decide to play this as a heel thing, that then play right with how he's been played in those commercials. It's
right.
It's got to be, you know, it's got to be them playing this as an honest mistake.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike, because look, if I say to you, hey, Mike, you've cheated for me in a match 3 or 4 times and I've gladly accepted your help, and now you tried one and it backfired and I blame you for my loss, doesn't that make me look like the heel?
Yes.
Right,
yes,
exactly.
I mean, you know, we've seen when the horsemen were, you know, when the horsemen were played as good guys, you know, and they would eventually cheat for Ric Flair or Arn Anderson or whomever was in the horsemen at the time, that they didn't say anything about it. They just left it alone, and we just
right.
accepted it as the cheating just didn't work out, you know.
Right. Now, let me run this scenario by you. Say they taped Rusev saying, Aiden, I want you out there with me tonight because you've been with me from the beginning. But I do not want any interference. I'm going to do this on my own because I have something to prove. So no matter what happens, whether I win or lose, just be there to root me on, but do not interfere. And Aiden English says, I understand. Happy to be out there. And then he does it. Then Rusev has a right to say, what the freak did I tell you? Then it's different, Mike. But under these circumstances, it's not, because Rusev was gladly accepting Aiden English distraction before. And it, just because it backfires doesn't mean he now should take it all out on Aiden and blame him, because that makes him look like a sore loser and Aiden English a loyal friend who was trying to help, but it backfired. And that's exactly the opposite of what you want.
Yes, that's exactly. And furthermore, you can tomorrow you can have his wife come out and say, I told you so or whatever, and this, that, and the other, and that type of thing. Now you really can't do that, because the way it
right.
plays is that it's an honest mistake. You know,
right. Now, if you used my scenario, you could have had Rusev say, and his wife say, what the hell did you do? You cost me my title shot. And Aiden English could have said, do you honestly think that without me you could have any chance of beating AJ Styles? Do you honestly think you'd even be in this position without me? How many times have I cheated for you? You better face the fact. You're not as good as you think you are. I'm the guy who was doing all the winning for you. Then Aiden English is the bad guy. But under these circumstances, if Rusev says, because of what you did last night, you're out of here, he looks like a sore loser, and Aiden English looks like a guy who gets punished because he's loyal to a guy. And that is not what you want, unless you want Rusev to be the big heel and Aiden English to be the face, which I don't think that's what you want. So that one was a little bit of a we'll wait and see, but I was very impressed with Rusev. I'm always impressed with AJ Styles. It's come to the point where AJ Styles is amazing. He's 40-some-odd years old. Did you see the flip thing he did off the ropes? It's just, you know, he really is phenomenal. That's not a catchphrase. He's phenomenal. I mean, his timing, his facial expressions, his selling ability, he's the real deal. I mean, he is phenomenal. In my opinion, he's the best professional wrestler the WWE have. All in all, if you take everything into consideration, he's the best one they have. Seth Rollins is probably a close second, but he's not AJ Styles. Not yet. He's a lot younger. Give him some time. But right now, AJ Styles, in my opinion, is the best they have. So let's get to Seth Rollins in the Iron Man match. Because really, Raw has two villains. One is Dolph Ziggler, You can forget Baron Corbin now. He's a worthless villain. Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre, who they're trying very desperately to have the fans no longer cheer for, because they want to cheer for Drew. Because A, he's pretty cool looking. B, he looks like he's a serious badass. And C, they remember him being a face in NXT. But anyway, 30-man Iron Minute match. And I'm not usually a fan of Iron Man matches because they're usually very contrived. So they tried a different formula. And you could take this one of two ways, really, this formula. See the glass half full or half empty. So let me go pessimistically. Pessimistically, this looks like even with a 3-0 advantage, Seth Rollins could not beat Dolph Ziggler. He literally blows a 3-0 advantage, which it doesn't look good for Seth Rollins, let's face it. Whether he cheated or not, whether Drew McIntyre got involved or not, a 3-0 lead and you blew it. Now the glass half full is, he was dominating Dolph Ziggler until Drew McIntyre got involved, and from that point on, Seth was fighting an uphill battle because he was rattled by Drew McIntyre. So those are the two different stories as they play out, depending on your perspective. But these two guys, and I've heard people say, the match was your favorite. I don't know what you want. It was a great match. I thought it was a great match. It had some quirky, weird stuff. Like, I don't know why the referee can tell you you got to go back when Kurt Angle said he could stay. And I don't know why he wasn't disqualified twice, because after the first disqualification, then he came back, which you would think that would mean another disqualification since it's a different instance. And then he came back the third time at the end of the match. I still say my scenario of coming in there and hitting Dolph Ziggler instead of Seth Rollins and having the referee have no choice but to disqualify Seth would have been a lot smarter and a lot cooler. But the way they did it wasn't bad. And man, these guys, there wasn't a ton of rest holds. There really wasn't in a 30-minute match. These guys can go. For the benefit of people who were like, I'm sort of put off on Ziggler, I don't know. I've always thought Ziggler was great. And Seth Rollins is really cranking on all cylinders. And Drew McIntyre added to the mix. These are your three guys right now that you really, really, really want to promote. If on Raw. And I thought they did a good job with it. It definitely sets up Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. And it lets Dolph Ziggler move on to, I wonder who's going to challenge him now. Which is great, because it could be Finn Balor. It could be a number of people, which we're going to see some great matches out of Dolph Ziggler. And this is the only time in this whole entire event that the announce team, who was abysmal last night, Coach was almost unlistenable. I mean, he said things that you're just like, I don't even know. What are you talking about? Corey Graves blew the fact that it was a no DQ match and said, let's go for the disqualification. They were horrible. But the one good thing that was said last night was Corey Graves said, I believe, Seth Rollins told me that if he wins, he's going to go back to the U.S. Challenge as early as the Intercontinental Challenge as early as tomorrow night. And when he said that, I thought to myself, I think he's winning. I think he's winning then, because why would you say that? You know, it's something to like, oh, so tune in, because this is going to start tomorrow night, and maybe Drew will be the guy who tries to cash in. That's what I was thinking. So I'm like, wow, okay, maybe they're going to let him win. That threw doubt into what was going to happen in this match. Because I had no doubt going in. Going in, I knew Dolph Ziggler was going to retain. The minute Corey Graves said that, I said, wait a minute. Maybe not. Maybe they're going to do this thing where Seth Rollins wins and Drew McIntyre comes out for the challenge and Dolph Ziggler is not so much behind him as he was behind Dolph, and maybe this whole thing's going to explode. That was what went through my mind. So kudos to Corey Graves for that line, because that helped. That helped throw some doubt. What do you think of the whole match, Mike?
I liked it. And look, we've said, you know, It's not when he and the Miz were when Ziggler and the Miz were in their long series of matches, and we said these are two of your top guys, and at that point AJ Styles was on that show with them, and we said, you know, they are your top guys right now. Ziggler keeps proving that if they don't, we know how short-term his contract is. If they don't re-sign him and use him the way he should be used, he still has something to give to pro wrestling. It may be with another company, but he has something to give. I want to see another match between these two guys.
So do I, and I'll tell you something. I don't know how many of you people watch the pre-show. I don't blame you if you don't, because Booker T is unwatchable. Booker T laughs at his own jokes over top of people who are trying to give analysis. He's so annoying, it's beyond belief. And all he wants to do is get himself over. But when Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre appeared on that pre-show, they didn't go over the top. They didn't say, oh, we're the evil villains. They came across so good on that pre-show that I said to myself, man, that's what I want out of pro wrestling. Those are the ultimate heels, because they absolutely came across as two guys who say, we're not doing anything wrong. In our world, this is the way it goes. Period. And I'm thinking, you know, it's almost like when a guy knows something's evil and he says, I know, and I did it on purpose and I loved it. That's not as good to me as when a guy says, what are you talking about? This is the way the game works. This is how we play the game. I'm the champion because of a mistake that Seth Rollins made. And the mistake Seth Rollins made was he became the champion and thought he was going to just challenge anybody in the locker room. And I picked the right time. And because I did that, I'm the champion. That's great. Those two actually came off really good on that pre-show. Really good. Now, Derek in the chat room is making a point that it was kind of silly, the fans chanting down every, you know, after the 10-second mark to the next minute. Yeah, it was. It was kind of dumb. The fans were hot and cold all night long. Some of the things they did, I didn't agree with. Some of the times they seemed to be really into the matches. But here's the deal. At least by changing the main event to this, you not only gave great credibility to the Intercontinental title, but you acknowledged one thing. We're going to finish with the best we got. That was a very big message to me. Because I am tired of pay-per-views that's like, the third match is the best match. And we know it's going to be the best match just because of who's in it. And then you're going to sit through a couple of matches, and then the pay-per-view's end is going to be two people lugging around the ring who, you know, Brock Lesnar's going to fight somebody, and it's going to be Bill Goldberg. I hope the WWE, I hope this message is the WWE ain't going to do that anymore. That the WWE is going to say, look, we're going to close with the best we got. We're going to close with the one that's going to steal the show. Because I don't remember last time an Intercontinental title match was the main event of a pay-per-view. So the only thing I can think is that the WWE has woken up and said, we know these guys are going to tear the house down. Ain't nobody following them. So let's make this the main event. Because Bobby Lashley's ass sure as hell isn't going to follow it. Can you imagine if that match was the ending of that pay-per-view? If that match was the ending of that pay-per-view, it would probably actually make the pay-per-view seem worse than it was. I'd probably be on the air right now saying, eh, it kind of crapped out. Instead of saying it was pretty good. So that's how much it means. The order of these matches means something. And you should be finishing the show if you're the best they got. Or you're the most, you know, fans will say the most important. Well, no, that's not always true. The most important is always going to be the title matches, of course. And AJ Styles is fantastic. And Rusev is great and very popular. But in this particular event, the right people ended that show. Fans went home remembering that was a damn good match. And the one before it was a damn good match. So now you can forget that pretty much everything that came before that was not a damn good match. See what I mean? So we can forgive, oh my God, the Shinsuke Nakamura thing was a joke, and the tag team match was boring, and okay, Brian and Kane was okay, but it wasn't anything special, and Kevin Owens' moment was great, but other than that, the match wasn't super special. There wasn't anything caliber until the last two matches, which means the WWE planned it like, I always say, fireworks, where the main event is the grand finale, and those are the best two things you had. And they haven't been doing that lately. So, Mike, I thought that was good.
I thought it was good as well. And look, as far as Rusev goes, that match hurt neither one of those guys. And that, I mean, yeah, the Bobby Lashley match might have hurt Bobby Lashley a little bit, but it didn't hurt. I don't think it particularly hurt Roman Reigns, because, like I said, he basically carried that match, and he was getting some heat with those chants, you know. So
yeah,
if your goal is to at least get the guy to get some heat, that happened. So, you know.
Yeah, so what we're going to do, we're going to stay on a little bit past our time. We're told we can do that, so that's great. Is we're going to analyze these a little bit. Let's start from the pre-show. Almas versus Sin Cara. Did it help Almas at all? No. As a matter of fact, it hurt Almas, because Almas is now just a tiny fraction better than Sin Cara, who has done absolutely nothing for the last I don't know how long in booking-wise. So it wasn't a dominant and defining performance for Almas, who is probably going to have match of the year this year in NXT. And that's a shame, because Almas deserves better than that. New Day versus Sanity. Does it hurt the New Day? No. Does it help Sanity? Marginally. Marginally it does, but they need more than this. Much more than this. B-Team versus Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy. Does that help the B-Team? Marginally again, because the fans weren't chanting B-Team. They had to pump in the music, because when Bo Dallas was saying, come on, everybody, B-Team, B-Team, there's crickets. So they just pumped the music loud so you couldn't tell. Does it hurt Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy? It destroys Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy. It absolutely destroys them. Here's these two mythical guys. One guy has this weird world, and the whole idea behind Matt Hardy was, I lost so many matches, I snapped, and I became woken. And now you're going to see a different and a much more aggressive and hard to beat Matt Hardy, and then he just loses every match. Every match. And Bray Wyatt is this big, the leader of worlds, darkness personified. He can't win anything. So it's destroyed them. Hopefully you don't see them anymore, because it's absolutely 100% destroyed them. Derek says, I enjoy the B-Team stuff. That's fine, but the problem is this. I enjoy the B-Team too. They don't belong champions. And the reason they don't belong champions is for the same reason Jinder Mahal did not belong champion, because you don't go from bums to champion in 2 weeks. If you're going to complain that, Jinder Mahal went from a jabron to a champion way too quick, then you better not be a hypocrite and say the B-Team deserves it. They don't. I'd have rather seen the B-Team have some pluses and some minuses and really work toward it, and then you say, wow, they've earned it. They didn't earn it. They were just handed it. And they were handed it by proxy, because Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy have about as much charisma as a lump of coal. They both destroyed their careers tag teaming. And Derek says, didn't the B-Team win a lot more on their way up? Who'd they win? Who they beat? They upset a couple of minor teams, Titus Worldwide and, a couple of minor teams. That's it. And they always look like, we just barely squeaked it out. We're lucky. And now you beat these guys. Now you're the champions. It's too quick. It's not that I don't enjoy the B-Team. I just don't want them the champions. They are not the best team, and they're not the, and they shouldn't be the earmark. And they're not going to be. They're going to be a transitional champion. And that's not going to help them either. So if you really enjoy the B team, you don't want them to be the champions because you know why they're the champions. They're not the champions to keep it till WrestleMania. They're the champions to hand it over at SummerSlam. And then what happens to the B team? So if you like the B team, you'd prefer them not to be the champions and let them keep up with their funny stuff. So I thought really that, you know, was neither here nor there. Let's go to the Finn Balor and Baron Corbin. Did it help Finn Balor? Nah. Finn Balor got tossed around like a little boy and then wrapped a guy up in a small package. Does it make him look like he's a really tough guy or a lucky guy? Made him look like a lucky guy. In my opinion. I don't know if they can still hear me in the chat room. Can you still hear me in the chat room past the time? I never knew that. If you can, let me know. Anyway, we have then. Let's go to Carmella and Asuka. Did it help Asuka in any way, shape, or form? No, it makes her look like an idiot who is so easily distracted. Anybody could beat her as long as you distract her. And Carmella's a helpless girl who can't do a thing. So far, it hasn't helped anybody. Baron Corbin is, you know, he's a bad guy who can't win. Now, Team Hell No, yes, it helped the Bludgeon Brothers. It helped Daniel Bryan, and it helped Kane. So there is a positive. There's a thumbs up. Yes, it helped everybody. AJ Styles versus Rusev? Absolutely. It helped AJ Styles, and it helped Rusev. Absolutely. Roman Reigns versus Lashley, who did it help? It weakens Roman Reigns and makes Lashley look exactly what he is, worthless and boring. And Dolph Ziggler and Seth Rollins, you bet, it helped everybody. So out of this, three matches helped everybody. The rest of the matches helped nobody. Absolutely nobody. So for that reason, I'm going to give this a C. Oh, I should say Kevin Owens and Braun Strowman. Did it help Braun Strowman? Only if you want Braun Strowman to be a heel who tried to kill somebody. Does it help Kevin Owens? I guess if you're trying to make Kevin Owens look tough and you know, sympathetic. But I'm going to give it a C overall, Mike.
I got to agree with you. C overall, you know. There are high spots and low spots, but a C overall.
Yeah, I mean, Maniac saying Bray didn't take the fall. No, Bray didn't take the fall. But how does it help Bray Wyatt? It doesn't help anybody. Matt Hardy's lost literally every match. And Bray Wyatt coming back off, you know, a couple of weeks off looked like, well, I'm easily distracted. Those guys just need to go. You're better off having Matt Hardy by himself than with Bray Wyatt, and you're much better off having Bray Wyatt by himself than with Matt Hardy, because when you put them together and water them down, neither one of them is any damn good. That's the problem. A match should always help at least one person if it's a squash match. For instance, you're not trying to help Sin Cara with Almas. You're not trying to do that. You're trying to get Almas over. So for that reason, Sin Cara should have been dusted. Now, with a Dolph Ziggler versus Seth Rollins, you're trying to keep both guys strong. And they did. With a Bludgeon Brothers versus Team Hell No, you're trying to keep all the participants strong. And they did. Daniel Bryan had to fight both guys for a long time until Kane came down, so him losing is no big deal. Kane coming down injured makes him look like brave and loyal to Daniel Bryan, and Daniel Bryan looks like a tough guy who says, I'm never quit. So they end up looking great. The Bludgeon Brothers end up looking very dominant. Everybody wins. So that's a good booking because everybody wins. But these bookings like Carmella versus Asuka, everybody loses. Everybody loses. Maybe Ellsworth doesn't lose, but Asuka looks like a woman who is so distracted by outside things that she can't focus on a wrestling match when she's supposed to be the ultimate wrestling machine. And Carmella looks like someone who couldn't beat James Ellsworth unless somebody interfered for her. So that doesn't help her as champion. That helped no one. Shinsuke Nakamura, did it marginally help him look like a cheater and a bad guy? Yeah, a little bit. But it also made him look like he didn't want to give the fans a match, and that's not his call, but that's what it looks like. Jeff Hardy, same thing. Looks like, I don't want to give the fans a match. I don't know how it helps Randy Orton. He's a heel, so what? So you pick a moment to come down when a guy's already on the mat, whether you should have cost him the match. He didn't cost him the match. He's already lost the match. So that's really weird booking. Really weird booking. So overall, not many of these matches helped in the right way. Baron Corbin was destroyed. Destroyed by this. You can't beat Finn Balor. When you say, I'm a big, tough guy, and you can't beat Finn Balor, then I don't know. Then you might as well stay on the outside of the ring and just be a character that does these, you know, authority things and wrestle once in a while, because you're not a legitimate threat as a heel anymore. This is the problem with the WWE. They don't understand that the booking has to help at least one tremendously if you have no interest in the other. And if you have an interest in both, it has to help both in some way. You can have a winner or a loser. Kevin Owens lost, but it helped Kevin Owens. Seth Rollins lost, but it helped Seth Rollins. Rusev lost, but it helped Rusev. Those are proper bookings. Asuka lost. It destroyed Asuka. Corbin lost. It destroyed Corbin. Those are improper bookings. And they should know that by now. So for me, it's a C overall. Todd, what do you think?
I gotta go with you, a C overall as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, hold on one moment. In the chat room, Maniac saying it's not, you know, it wasn't punishment to Bray Wyatt. I guess that was his point. It wasn't punishment to Bray Wyatt for his reckless driving or whatever to lose the match. No, of course it wasn't, because Matt Hardy got pinned. Of course it wasn't. We're sorry if we lost the chat room here. I don't know what's going on with that. It's bizarre. But again, if Maniac's point was that Matt Hardy taking the fall didn't equal punishment, yeah, of course it didn't. They're not trying to punish Bray Wyatt. I don't think they're mad at Bray Wyatt, or Bray Wyatt would have taken the pin. I just think they're upset overall that that team didn't go over at all, and they're just saying, to hell with them, Mike. What do you think? Mike, are you there? Todd, are you there?
Hello.
Hey, Mike. Can you hear me?
Oh yeah, I'm here. You're okay. Absolutely right. You know, it didn't really help or hurt Bray Wyatt because, you know, he didn't do much. And really, again, the whole thing about gelling with your tag team partner. I mean, it's just about time that they think about doing something with Bray Wyatt other than what they're doing. I mean, turning him, doing whatever, you know, and that's the point. If he's not, if his career is stalled where it is, which I think it is, you know, you got to do something.
We'll see what they end up doing with Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy tonight, I think. Whatever they're going to do, I think they better do. This tag team is irrelevant at this point, totally irrelevant. Anyway, I'm going to give it a C because the matches that were great were really good, and the matches that were bad were abysmal. Abysmal. If the last couple of matches weren't as good as they were, this would have been a D-minus pay-per-view. But the last two matches changed my mind a lot on it. So I'm going to give it a C, and we'll see what happens. We'll give it a C for let's see what happens tonight on Monday Night Raw, and we will be back here tomorrow at 12 noon to tell you. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.